Special shout out to today's episode to SeatGeek. We recently partnered with them to become a brand ambassador. What does that mean? Well, for you, it means you get a special discount when you make your first ticket purchase with SeatGeek. With my code, InjuredListPod, you will get $20 off your first purchase with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is a ticket purchasing app that takes all the confusion out of buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert events, and more. They score each ticket on a scale of 1 to 10 to help you know if you're getting a good deal. Green is good, red is bad. My followers get $20 off their first ticket purchase using my code, InjuredListPod. Click on the link in the show notes and browse for your favorite events. Your next big night ever is waiting, and they have the tickets.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the host of the Injured List podcast, Brian Scott.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of the Injured List podcast, and I've got an awesome guest as usual today. I want to bring him up to the stage because we don't have a minute to waste. He's got a lot to talk about, and we've got a lot of things to cover with him, mostly because he's been through so much. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Mike Dempsey.
How you doing today, Brian?
I'm good, Mike. Fellow New Yorker, raised in Brooklyn, went to University of Albany, played football there. Your career got a little derailed by injuries. We're going to get into that in a minute. But you've got a lot of other things. Have they made a movie about you yet? That's my big question.
Mark Wahlberg's going to play me. So the backstory is that Mark, who's golf outing every year, Mark has played my friend Irish Mickey Ward.
Okay.
Writer movie. And he's also played my friend Vince Papale in Invincible.
Yep. So two great sports movies.
Every time I see Mark, I'm like, you're missing Dempsey here. So we're working on it. I met his golf outing in end of August in Detroit.
There you go.
I need a good pitch. So if you can be my agent, I'll give you 10%.
I'll get to work on that pitch right away as soon as we're done recording. But yeah, right. Mike, I'm excited to have you on, a fellow New Yorker. You've been through a tremendous amount of experiences in life. A lot of what you're doing now focuses on the philanthropy side, but you've been an athlete. You played multi-sports. Football in particular is what I brought you on to talk about because your career got a little derailed by some knee injuries, which is not unusual, unfortunately, in the sport of football. Take me back through your growing up. Take me to University of Albany and how that kind of unfolded.
Well, I was a two-sport athlete. I played baseball, actually. To be quite honest, I was a better baseball player. You know, for a guy that didn't, so in high school, when I played in Midwood High School in Brooklyn, we could only choose one sport, which I think is, again, really kids should play multiple sports,
yeah.
Right? But football was a commitment I made, and I could not play baseball. I was a little league star or whatever. You grew up at Parade Grounds in Brooklyn, if you know the area over there.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to take basically 4 years off of baseball. But, you know, when I got up to my college career started at Boston University, got injured as a walk-on for a football scholarship at BU. They don't have a program there anymore. But I basically had to come home. I was a poor kid from Brooklyn, and that semester tuition cost my parents about $12,000, which was a lot of money back then in 1989.
Yeah.
So I had to pay it back 4 summers, by the way, working at the Brooklyn Barry Tunnel.
Okay.
As a total worst job in the world, but I paid everything back with interest to my mom. So
right.
I did my commitment. I missed a lot of great summers, by the way.
I feel like only a New York mom would make you charge interest, right?
You know, you gotta love mom for doing that. But no, that taught me a lot about work ethic and commitment at a very young age.
Yep.
But no, I mean, baseball I picked up, and then I had to go to Brew College, which was in the city, if you remember,
yeah.
New York City,
oh,
23rd and Lex. And first semester until I figured out where I was going to go next, because I knew I wanted to play college football. And now it's derailed, and I'm ready to play again. But played baseball for Baruch. I walked on and made the baseball team as a third baseman in spring of 90, you know, after not playing 4 or 5 years of baseball. So I know I had much more talent in baseball,
yeah.
but football was really what got me to the promised land, as you would say it. Yeah. Right. So, and then I played, obviously, then I transferred to University of Albany, had a connection there through my high school. Defensive coordinator came from our school, and I got an opportunity to play. Came right in as a sophomore, was able to start, not sit on the bench. I didn't like running the bench and got the opportunities. But because the funny story is I graduated a little later. So what happens is when you transfer three schools in a year, happens is a lot of those credits don't transfer over. Yep. So I was delayed in graduating. I didn't graduate on time. I was there up in there in summer '93, and the arena football team, the Albany Firebirds, were practicing at our university. And they were had two guys that went down for the season, and they needed a body. I was a body, right? I'm not going to say I was the best available guy, but I'm an opportunist, not a hustler. There you know, so opportunity came, and I was able to be in a week time. I didn't know what I was going to do when I graduated. I had no idea. And now I'm a professional football player. That check was, and I have it somewhere in my office. I should have pulled it out for this podcast, but it's pretty small.
I'm sure it's not what people would expect. Or
no, 1993, by the way. So it was very pitiful, but I was still a professional something, right? So I got the opportunity, and then I'm, you know, learning arena football, which is a whole different game than playing college football, as you know, different style of football completely. And there it goes, 3 weeks in, I'm starting to get where I'm going to get playing time and play with some guys named Sylvester Bunbury, some really good players on our squad. And boom. I had the most devastating ACL tear meniscus. It was two pops, you know, for sure, for the purposes of your viewers, you know, when you have usually that one pop, this was two.
Yeah.
We got stuck in turf, and I went one way, I cut, and my leg didn't really move, and it was got up and I fell down again. It was one of the most devastating injuries that that anybody could have.
Yeah,
I had what was called back in those days. Now they have much more better surgeons and better surgeries. They gave you two options. One is take the hamstring and graft it. There's a longer recovery time, or we have what was called the cadaver graft, basically a dead person, right? They take it, and that was a quicker recovery.
It is.
So I took the road of quicker recovery. The only thing with the quicker recovery is the stability is not as there as you would think.
And I'm going to cut you off here for a second, because the we still do those two techniques today. The issue with the cadaver graft is it has a much higher rate of re-tearing as well. And so a lot of guys will opt not to do that nowadays. We're also using patellar tendons. And also now a lot of guys are starting to use quadricep tendons.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I did re-tear it. So I think your theory was right on me, because I did have, I've had two ACLs on the, and the second time I got it done the right way. But so that was the start of my my football comeback. And I had a family friend, Mrs. Steinberg, you might know Lee, who was representing Steve Young, Troy Aikman, Warren Moon, a list of roster of all-star guys. And this guy, family friend of a guy who was an undrafted wannabe. And with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers come down there in 95, and I wasn't cleared. Obviously, I did the physical. I wasn't able to. I mean, the test back then is kind of funny. You look at like the combine and, you know, like things like the broad jump. And I was barely able to go, like, you know, like there was a lot of, I wasn't ready for that yet.
Yeah.
So I did get to camp, and I was on the physical unable to perform list in 95. Basically that year of Sam Weiss, or that I went to the one butt place, but didn't do anything other than be in a trainer's room. Right. Yeah. So let's say Sam wasn't a big fan of mine. You know, I don't think that stage in his coaching career, he had some great successes with the Bengals. And I think by the time he was done with Tampa, wasn't exactly his cup of tea.
Yeah.
A little grumpy old guy, but I love him anyway. But then the next year was the year that obviously the Glazer family comes in, and you got obviously Tony Dungy comes in, Herm Edwards, who did like me, which was Herm is my kind of guy. Everybody needs that one guy that believes in you. And I got I was on practice squad in 96, but by the time October of 96, you know, still was struggling, obviously, just physically. I was a step slower, which I wasn't that fast to begin with. You got to remember, my best 40-yard time was a 4.98, right? So you got guys like Derek Brooks that run a 4.6, 4.7,
Hardy
Nixon, guys that will weigh. So, you know, I know I don't really measure myself by the speed. It's more about, but definitely was, it was more mental, I think, than anything. I would say that I think I just was a neighbor, but whatever it was, never the fastest guy to begin with, and it definitely didn't help the fact that I was a little bit step slower. still think.
Well, the ACL injuries will certainly have more an effect than people actually realize, and to be honest, and that has been proven in the literature. You know, guys, it's not as innocent an injury as people would think. Guys do tend to lose quite a bit of power, quite a bit of speed and agility. And it's not just a subjective thing. It's pretty objective if you look at the data. So it's, you probably did lose a step where you couldn't afford to lose one. So,
right. Yeah. Well, again, I was at the strength and I wasn't at that, but I had to overcome for, you know, and obviously, but then as I get cut and now I'm starting a new career down in Tampa and I had no job. I tried professional wrestling.
Yeah.
I saw that. Interesting. Because I lived in a development in Tampa. It was called Parker's Landing, where the Buccaneers had, had us monthly rentals, and they had the professional wrestlers living there. I grew up as a fan of the old WWF with Bob Backlund, sure. And you look around in your development, you got like I had Brian Adams, he played Crush, and all these other wrestling guys living in my thing. So met a guy named Terry Taylor, the Red Rooster. The Red Rooster had me hook me up with Atlanta, the WCW power plant, and I went down there to resurrect, just like Bill Goldberg did successfully. I did unsuccessfully go down to the power plant. And in about 3 days, and taking back bumps and hitting the ropes, I had lacerations on my back. I mean, these ropes are, oh my God. Uh-huh. I mean, it looks on TV like they're soft. Those things ripped my, I mean, the marks I had on my back were just vicious. But then by day three, they're giving you the bumps. Now, I would think, and I've talked to a lot of guys about this, they had this guy, Dwayne Bruce. He was called him the Sarge, little guy, but little guy, I was a real drill sergeant, and I think because I was a football guy, he pushed me harder, and I was still not totally ready for that. Yeah. Orndorff, who was my hero as a kid, he was there, Paul, but he was more trying to encourage me. But by day, I took a bump, and it called a stinger. It was like an inverted pile driver, and the guy didn't protect my head or protect me, and I guess I was supposed to tuck my head, which I still don't know what that means. I'm not a gymnast. I wasn't a gymnast growing up in Brooklyn. We didn't do that kind of stuff. I didn't follow instructions, but all I know is that my head hit the mat. I didn't feel my legs for like 30, 40 seconds. It was scary.
Yeah, that's scary.
You know what I'm saying? You know, and we'll get to the head injuries in a minute, you know, that the impact of that was like I was literally seeing stars, you know. And I just remember the day four, I told Paul, I'm done. I went back to Tampa with nothing. Your Rock had, what, $7 in his pocket? I had $5.35, maybe. So I was done. So it was a very humbling. And then I got back down to Tampa. I got my first Wall Street job with Salomon Brothers. Nice. Liar's Poker was the book that wrote about them. And I got my whole career in Wall Street. Ended up 5 years later at Credit Suisse First Boston in the World Trade Center, and I was injured in 9/11. And that's a story to sell for a whole nother. That could take an hour to tell that crazy story.
I almost feel like Forrest Gump might have been modeled after you.
Might have been. Well, we'll get to that. I haven't got to the Vegas story yet, so we got to. Then you could add the Forrest Gump analogy, but the 9/11 story, and it was actually what's crazy was I was supposed to accept the job with Cantor Fitzgerald right before 9/11. I still do a lot of work with them every year. Yes. I'm part of the Cantor Fitzgerald family, as you probably know. I work very closely with Howard Lutnick and his sister Edie. We do a big celebrity charity day. We bring celebrities, raise money every year. They donate their commissions, and that's like the philanthropy side. We'll get to the end of the story. But Credit Suisse, I was injured coming out of the second tower by Sam Goody. So it was a Sam Goody record store. For people that don't know, records existed back in the old days. My kids don't know that, but there was the Sam Goody store, and went out that exit on Liberty and Greenwich Street. And as the second plane hit the building, I was in the building when the first plane hit. Mm-hmm. The second plane hit, I was under it and I got knocked out. I was out for about close to what they say is like 27, 28 minutes until I was found in City Hall Park. Anybody who knows downtown Manhattan knows that World Trade Center, City Hall Park, about three blocks. So who carried a 6'3", 235 pound guy? Don't know how I got there. I was trampled, left for dead. But the good story is I was rescued by somebody. Could have been a civilian, could have been a firefighter. Who knows? Never found out that story. But I had a fractured skull, internal bleeding. But back to the head injury part, I had probably by that point, now that I'm involved in the Boston University CT Center, it had a lot of concussions. Now, I was
probably more than you can even count if you think back, right?
A lot of it was bad coaching, you know. So in high school, I saw it's a badge of honor. I still have my helmet. I should bring that in and have it in my other room.
Oh, like, I'm sure it's pretty beat up.
Well, yeah, we had the marks. It was a white helmet, the Riddell helmet. And, you know, you had the badge of honor as a linebacker to get as many hit spears. And I lean, you know, I'm surprised I'm not paralyzed. You know, yeah. I was very lucky. I was taught the wrong way to play football. Now there's much more safety involved and teaching kids the techniques, and I didn't learn it the right way.
Yeah, the NFL had a big campaign several years ago called Practice Heads Up Tackling, I think it was, where they went out to a lot of the youth organizations and tried to reinforce the proper technique when it comes to tackling.
Very important. I mean, so again, I was taught the wrong way, and I think some of those bad habits followed me in college and a couple times where, but you know, back then, you know, I remember one game against St. Lawrence University when I was playing in Albany. I was knocked out. I mean, I was out. I don't remember. They were like, oh, yeah. But we stayed in the game. We don't want to lose your spot. Because we had, especially middle linebacker, we were so deep at middle linebacker. Yeah. We had guys like Chris Loche, Kevin Knight, all these guys that just wanted your spot. So you're just like, oh, I'm good. But, you know, I remember one, I had a baseball, when I played college baseball at Albany, you know, I played in Baruch, and then I played at Albany baseball. I played both sports.
Yeah.
And I was beamed in the head. I remember that one was because now that they – when you do the Boston University, the CT study that I'm in, they make you go back and look at every part of your – I'm like, oh, I didn't think of that.
Oh, yeah.
Question. Definition is now brought into what it is
correct.
Now.
So. And you bring up a great point when you're talking about that stuff. I mean, back in the day, I mean, I can remember when I started my athletic training career back in the early 2000s, late 90s, you know, you get a little – your bell rung, right? You didn't lose consciousness. Some guys would just kind of brush that off. And then you come back to the sideline. We do like a quick little eval. If you were okay, you sit there for 10, 15 minutes. If you felt good and you could do all our commands and answer all our questions, get back in there. You're good.
Exactly.
Not so much. Not the case anymore after a lot of this research has come out.
Yeah, no, and then of course, you know, as I got older, you know, you take that 9/11 head injury, right? Which obviously has, and it's funny because at the time, the injury that really had stayed with me long was I had the internal bleeding. You know, that was the one that took me. That's why I was in hospital for three more days at the 9/11. But, you know, the skull fracture, you know, it's like, you know how it, you know, you get back and things are, but things aren't all, you don't think about the post effects of that until years later and you get into your 40s, into your 50s. And so a couple of years ago, I started playing flag football. Well, before that, I also started doing boxing. So you know that story. I ran into Jerry Cooney, who was my idol, at a charity day event for Cannon Fitzgerald. And actually, was at Mark Wahlberg's charity day event. Yeah. Jerry was like, hey, we should do it, because he did a fight night every year for his charity, YCS in New Jersey. And we said, what a cool idea to do Dempsey, Baby Jack. He called me Baby Jack all the time. Let's do Dempsey, Cooney. And Jerry would get in the ring three rounds and go at it with an amateur and whatever. And I had boxing experience. Of course, it was 27 years earlier, but I'm like, oh, I could get back in there. You know, the competitive athletes always want to do one last bit of glory. You know, I played baseball. I did the freelance with the Yankees. I did competitive tournaments. I got to play in the Yankees Old Timers Day one year. So I'm always living for that thrill to do something, be the Bo Jackson or be the Deion Sanders, right?
I'm guilty of that, too. I just picked up a pair of hockey rollerblades to go play with my son. I don't know what thinking.
Well, maybe we will play pickleball next year. We'll see.
I haven't been on roller skates since I was like 16.
I can't skate. Roller skating was okay, but ice skating, my ankles cannot handle ice skates. So
I know the feeling.
I started doing the boxing. I started getting in there. And Jerry gave me a little, we were training against Jerry Cooney Boxing Academy in New Jersey. This was early 2020 before COVID happened. And he's giving it to me in the ring, like, show me that, hey, don't take this lightly. And I took it real seriously. So I said, I'm going to get in the ring with Jerry. Then COVID happened and we postponed the fight. It got into 2022 and my opponent changed. Jerry tore his rotator cuff and he couldn't get in the ring. He was going to be a referee. He was going to go with Tim Witherspoon. Not a wise decision. Tim Witherspoon, two-time heavyweight champion, but that one didn't work out very well. Then I had another light, a cruiserweight champion. Then I ended up, we were going to do this cool thing for a guy that played football up in Albany. My college football teammate, Tim Rankins, has this promotion called Cage Wars. Mm-hmm. And Cage Wars was hosting a Mike Tyson fight night up in Albany. This was summer of 2022. And as long as I got my guy, Mickey Ward, to come there, I was going to get a fight on the undercard, the boxing card. There was an MMA and boxing. What a dream. I'm going to get in the ring. Mike Tyson's going to be the commentator on my fight up in Albany where I played football. It's a hero's welcome. End of story. I just want to end the story in the right way. Trained for 3 years, took up all that weight. I couldn't hold it anymore. And by that time in the summer, I tore my meniscus. of course. So now I'm really, no, I have to get surgery. It was at the point where, you know, it was getting really bad.
Yeah.
I can do a one and a two, but I can't really do a three. I can't do a hook. nothing I can leverage, right? You know, it was my left knee, the meniscus, and it was really.
Was that the good knee?
That was my good knee, anymore. Yeah. So I go up there, and then the boxing card is the New York State Boxing Commission cancels the boxing card. I guess there was licensing requirements, whatever it was, it fell apart. The MMA card was still intact.
Okay.
They had that. So I go up there, and Mike Tyson, I get to hang with Mike for the day in Schenectady at Rivers Casino. I had this a day that you would think you'd be jealous of. I'm hanging out with Arnie Mike Tyson, right? And then, and his trainer, Billy White, you know, I'm like having a day of my life, but I go back to my hotel room, I'm ready to cry because I'm just like, I got no boxing, no opponent, never going to happen. Yeah. So I'm in touch with Tommy Morrison's widow, Trisha, and we were friends on Facebook and everything. She reaches out to me and she says, Mike, what about Richie LaMontagne? I was like, who is he? I didn't really know much about him. He's an Everett, Massachusetts fighter, 3-time cruiserweight champion, 29-4 was his record. Good looking guys in GQ magazine, when it was in a Robert De Niro movie, Italian guy. We can market it, sell it.
Yeah, that sounds like Richie
versus, the only thing with Richie didn't get the memo as an exhibition. Richie thinks it's a real fight. Now, I don't know where the lines of communication were. So, but now I start seriously boxing. And let me tell you, the sparring that I was doing at home, you know, the headgear, it helps, but it doesn't help. Yeah. If you get hit with the headgear, it actually increases a lot of you have to wear it if you're a guy like me, but it actually, a lot of guys don't wear the headgear because it kind of restricts. And when you get hit on the side of the head like that, that whiplash and some of the effects of that is pretty bad. Any boxing guy will tell you that.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of boxers don't use the headgear when they spar. I needed to, obviously, I have no regrets on doing it, but definitely I took a lot of beating in the sparring because I really wanted to challenge myself. So when I got in a ring with Richie the Mountain or whoever it was, I was going to be at my best.
Sure.
At 51 years old. 51 years old, guy shouldn't be getting in the ring anyway, but that's another story.
That's another story. But,
we made it happen in 10 days, and I had Dickie Eklund from the Fighter movie in my corner. You know, the one Christian Bale played.
Yep.
Yeah, Eklund, crazy.
Great movie. Dickie. Great movie, too, by the way.
Dickie works my corner. I got Mickey as the referee. Mark, we have Mark on FaceTime, Wahlberg. It was like a Fighter movie sequel. It was in a, now instead of them being in Hoboken with like 5,000 people for Jerry, there's about 30 people, maybe half of them drunk Irish guys watching this fight in Lowell, Massachusetts, actually Box the Burn in Westford, Massachusetts, to want to be accurate, but Lowell area. And I get in the ring with Richie and I gas myself out, but I was already exhausted by that first round of the double ring. He brings his cut man, his manager, promoter. I'm thinking, I'm in for, we're wearing headgear. Richie thinks it's a real fight.
Yeah, he doesn't know any better.
That first round, Richie and I, this thing's on YouTube. You said, I mean, Richie comes out like gun and punching the nose, the mouth, and the biggest mistake I made was the mouthpiece. I left it at home in North Carolina.
Oh, no.
I went to a golf event. I think it was Joe Namath's golf event the day before the event, and I left it at home, the mouthpiece, which I need.
Which is vital to prevent concussions, by the way.
Yeah, so I think I went to Dick's Sporting Goods. I picked up one on the morning of, and you know, it's not molded. No. So when I'm getting hit in the mouth, it's like hanging out of my mouth and trying to, when you get the gloves on, you can't keep it in like that. You're trying to do this and he keeps punching me in the mouth. I mean, he was doing a good job on it, but then he got me in the rib shots, but it was, look, that three rounds was authentic. Anybody who watches it, we raised money for Team Mickey Wood Charities.
Nice.
I did my job. I really took one on the chin, literally.
Literally.
Yeah, the next day, Richie's like, oh, I hope I wasn't too hard. I thought you were – he saw all the videos I did with Johnny Damon, and we were just hyping the fight. I didn't mean I wanted to knock out Richie. I knew it was an exhibition, but Richie didn't get the memo, but it was a fun. So get the boxing. Now I'm looking. So then the next year, I get more involved in flag football, NFL alumni. We support the flag football initiative, and I played 2 years ago in L.A. Super Bowl week with the veterans. We do a veterans bowl. Alumni versus the vets. I had Kurt Warner, Jeff Garcia,
nice.
A lot of NFL guys. We come out, we raise money for the military charities, Operation Warrior Wishes, Sierra Delta. It was a great game. So then last year in Arizona, I got to play in the celebrity sweat flag football game, which is every year, 24, 25 years, Doug Flutie has spearheaded it. And it was, I was on Team Tracy McGrady. I had the Bella Twins and I had all these cool people. I love Bella Twins, by the way. That was my fun part. game. But yeah, we had Bree on my side, Nikki on the other side, and I said, "What a dream! I get to cover Nikki Bella." But that's another story for another day. But it was an incredible game. You know, here I am chasing down RG3, who's like half my age, right? AJ Osborne from the Vikings. Yep. He's 26. I'm 52. One over my head in the end zone. I said, if a 26-year-old guy can beat a 52-year-old guy man-to-man, then okay, I'm cool with that. Yeah, you know, it's all good.
That's okay. But that's what's expected.
But the adrenaline rush of playing in that game really revitalized me. Now I'm like, cool. I want to do as much of these flag football things as I can. So I play in a game in Auckland, New Zealand last July. We're promoting the sport there. And I should have just coached like I could have done, but I want to play. I'm going to have some fun, right? So I make an interception, which I never make interceptions because I have bad hands. But I make one in the third quarter, and they had a metal bench, was like literally close to the field, like where they had those rugby style fields. Yeah. You know, in American way, it's like it's far from the sideline. There, it's like right there. Did not know, didn't see it. I got pushed. It wasn't hard, but I went right into that metal bench. I got knocked out. Momentarily, I think maybe 20, 25. It was one of those things where you look up and you see
stars. Buddy. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen stars.
And how's your knee holding up through all this? I'm surprised your knee hasn't.
Oh, I know. The knee was okay. Except for all the knee injuries, my knee holds up, but then my head is the one that.
Yeah, the head. So, well, that's a cumulative thing. I mean, that just keeps adding on top of itself.
That's what happened on the way flight home. I go from Auckland with my daughter. We go from Auckland to LA to Denver to Raleigh. It was the. Could not sleep on the flight. That's where the head problem started, the headaches, and I couldn't sleep. That's where it started. So I reached out about a week and a half later to a guy named Chris Nowinski. If you don't know his name, he heads up the Concussion Legacy Foundation. Chris was a professional wrestler, WWF, WWE, whatever they call it. And Chris got injured, and he worked obviously Harvard, and he works very close to Boston University. All the big high profile, the brains that are donated. Chris is the one who makes sure that happens. And they do the research, and Concussion Legacy Foundation reach out to them. Hey, I need help. I'm having these headaches. I don't know what to do. I'm having some brain fog, as they call it. And he got me hooked up to the Concussion Legacy Foundation hotline, provide me the resources to learn about this now. And I'm thinking, okay, now I'm really having some heavy duty issues. From July to August and September, I'm losing my car keys. I'm losing my car in a garage. I mean, these are the things that, you know, I didn't think I would ever have happen to me, you know, getting kind of dementia at an early age.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out the, you know, and the CAT scans are coming up clean, right? Everything's, there's no brain bleed. It's just like an invisible injury. Yep. That's the thing
that's
that
exactly
you don't realize.
What it is, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't
know.
I
mean, describe it.
I supported the Concussion Legacy stuff, but I never knew that I'd be in that category. Wesley Walker's a good friend of mine. You know, if you're a Jet fan, you know Wesley's story. Yep. Play with one eye. I mean, blind in one eye. But Wesley had so many concussions in his career. He got Al Toon, Wayne Corbett. I mean, just the Jet team itself that I grew up with, all these guys. Bruce Harper, a good friend of mine. All these guys suffering with these. And it's like I said, you got guys like – I'm friends with Victor Green, who played a hard-hitting – position that's safety for the Jets, and Victor's completely fine, you know. And I can't figure out why Victor Green, who had more tackles than but you know, some guys
luck. Play. It's all it is, man. Yeah.
So I had this, so they really I got enrolled in this HOPE research study, and they're looking at the impact of repetitive head injuries and doing baseline on a lot of participants, and I'm there little guinea pig. When I was up there in Boston, I did the lumbar puncture. I mean, the whole.
Oh, yeah. The workup is quite intense. Yeah.
All these memory cognitive testing. And it's a lot of stuff I did. Hoping to get some answers. But I know probably what I'm going to do is be helping somebody down the road to see what's in my brain, because I know I pledged to donate my brain when I pass. And we'll hopefully get some answers. But that brain injury stuff is pretty serious. And,
oh, yeah.
I do, but I'll tell you what, I mean, I'm using it, you know, we do get through your day to day, and I see these guys, like I mentioned, Wesley and Bruce and all these other guys that deal with it. Jim McMahon's one of my best buddies. You know, Jim is, obviously he has the cannabis treatments that he does, and everyone, it's not one size fits all. Everybody has their own, thing that helps them. I haven't really figured out yet until I know all the results as to what is going to help me the most.
Yeah.
Getting sleep was really the biggest issue because I had vertigo and I had all these other related issues, physical therapy for 2 months. And, but you know, what motivated me is next year, we're going to revitalize the Veterans Bowl in New Orleans and we're going to have Drew Brees involved in that game and Kurt Warner again. And I hope to play one more series would be great.
Yeah, you got it in you.
I hope I have it in me. It's just sure that I got my balance back. I mean, it was really hard. Like October, November, I really was struggling with simple things like the balance. When they showed me how off I was, and then I went to a chiropractor for the first time, and my C4, C5 was so, but I did a lot of intensive therapy. So I'm trying to get back, but you know, the mental stuff is why I forget things. And
so they had you doing some physical therapy, but did they have you doing some cognitive stuff too, like therapy wise?
Yeah. I mean, what I'm doing now with the puzzles, I mean, I still can't do puzzles. I don't think I'm ever going to do, I couldn't do puzzles before I had these head injuries. So puzzles and not thinking that, but I was just some people good at puzzles, but I get it. You're trying to get, my long-term memory is sharp. I mean, my long-term memory has not been hampered. I don't believe it's the short-term memory stuff that I just have to create. I get aids. I do things on my phone. I have little notes that I keep track. Right. Even like tonight, you know, the podcast, I had to put little reminders, an alarm to otherwise I wouldn't be here right now because I would not have missed that last year. But now there's a lot more things going on and I had that more bad ADD. And so all these things that, you know, and I don't think that, again, there's a lot of great research being done, but there's no consistent story with how people deal with it. Everyone has their own, but I think they're just getting awareness about it. And making sure kids are safer playing the game. And don't play when you're, you know, 10 years old, 9 years old. You got to wait till your brain is developed enough where I think kids are rushing to play hard-hitting contact sports in like 6, 7 years old. And we know now that their brains are not. So all the things that have come out that I've learned, really amazing. Would I change a thing? I get that question a lot. Would I change anything about how I played football?
Yeah,
probably not. I mean, regrets, hindsight's 20/20, but I do now like really feel like I'm facing a lot of the issues now that I could have probably prevented if I had better coaching, better teaching. But
And I think a lot has changed, especially with football, because that has definitely been the biggest sport that it's affected across the board. And I can tell you the youth sports movement has definitely grasped a big time hold of that whole theory and concept with CTE and head injuries. You know, you see a lot more kids nowadays starting out at the flag football level, two hand touch, not doing contact until they get much older, which is great. There's no reason why you can't pick up the contact stuff later on in life and be just as good at it. I mean, because really it all does come down to technique. And that's the thing that will help you prevent concussions and prevent from getting injured. And you know what, my whole thing is like, I wish these professional guys would go back to square one and start learning the techniques again. I feel like they've really slacked off in that department, because now you're not hitting as much, maybe because you're afraid to get a penalty for the roughing the passers and all this other stuff. This pass interference calls are really flimsy nowadays. So you see guys that really don't even practice tackling anymore because they're like, well, I can't hit a guy. You know, and if I do, I'm just going to kind of wing it. And, you know, I wish they would just get back to the basics, to be honest.
Well, funny story I could share is like me on the flag football game, Slubby Sweat last year, we had a guy named Frankie Muniz from Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah,
watch that show with Brian Cranston. So he's out there and he's a little guy, you know, he's a NASCAR guy now. And I was really cool to play against him, but then he caught a pass from RG3 and he does a spin move over the middle on me. And I don't know what happened. The instinct of not knowing, forgetting it's flag and not even thinking. I kind of like picked him up a little bit, maybe threw him down a little hard. Now, how his pants ripped, I don't understand. I don't get that part of the story. I watch his pants apparently ripped. And, you know, he'll tell you that story.
Wardrobe malfunction. That's what they call it in Hollywood. And he's a Hollywood guy. Wardrobe malfunction.
But Frankie went down and I had Billy Blanks, the Tybo dude, on my team. And Billy, I said, is he okay? He goes, I think you killed him. Frankie did not come to the game this year. I think I knocked Frankie I think he'd rather do car racing and get banged by cars.
Maybe.
Than get banged by Mike Dempsey. So they had this kid this year, Ryan Ochoa. Ryan was a kid on Disney and iCarly. My kids watch him. Yep. And Ryan got the memo on me. So he's telling me if I played this year, he goes, don't please. I said, I hope you're on my team because otherwise I gotta, you know, we'll see. But
scouting report is out on you.
Yeah, exactly. sometimes things happen in the course of a game that you just can't explain.
So, but the whole Boston University CTE thing, man, that's like a great cause. I'm on board with it completely. You know, I had gone to a conference years ago in Boston about concussions, and this was really before the whole CTE thing kind of got spearheaded and really took, you know, got people's attention and stuff. And I can remember a lot of the discussions we were having at that lecture about proper tackling and equipment and, you know, things like that, and how You know, it was much worse off than we really were appreciating at the time. And so it's come a long way, even since I began my career about 20 plus years ago. So there's a lot more to be learned, a lot more things to be educated on. And Mike, I'm glad to hear that you're working very closely with the CTE people at BU and getting all that stuff done and doing a lot of the stuff that you're doing with the philanthropy stuff.
Well, there'll be improvements helping the game. I mean, even like stuff back in the day, if you played high school football, we had those nutcrackers. Remember the nutcracker drills? I mean, those things, you basically get up and blow the whistle and you got to hit the guy. I mean, you go head to head, you know, you don't think about that. That was the stuff we did in football camp over and over and over again. I can't say how many times it was like, who's going to lay out the other guy quicker? And then, you know, that's the stuff that could really now cause more. Even wrestling guys. I mean, I'm friends with a guy named Marty Jannetty. He's an ex-WWF wrestler. Marty's like a vegetable now, pretty much. He's had so many head injuries and all these other ECW wrestling guys. They take these bumps, and God, I was going to wrestle back in 1995. It was more like, you know, basic stuff. Now the flying, the chair shots. And I see these guys, like I'm friends with Chris Jericho, some of these other wrestlers, and I'm glad I'm not in that sport because these guys have some serious, that's why a lot of them don't live beyond 40, 50, 60. You see all the debts in pro wrestling. And I think these guys don't have the medical insurance. They're not unionized, right? They don't have their independent contractors. So, you know, I could say football players. That's why I think Chris got into this to not just help the wrestling guys. Chris Benoit, that tragic murder, who was one of my neighbors, by the way, in Tampa at one point. But you take that tragedy, but you look at all these other football guys, and we started seeing Dave Duerson, all these other stories of guys who just Mike Webster took their lives. And it's just, you realize that you get to a certain point where I started getting that depression. I mean, I was going through a lot of the things that I watched in the movie with the Will Smith movie, you know,
concussion.
It's kind of scary. You start thinking, and now it's like, man, I wish I hadn't done, but hey, if we can help the next generation, great, but learn from our mistakes. Right. And whatever I can add and tell my story and you know, hopefully I can still live and have seen my kids, have their kids and have grandkids, but whatever. But I want to make sure I'm around and be able to enjoy it. And getting there now, I mean, it's been a long, you know, 8 months since that happened, that injury happened to me. But it was, like you said, cumulative. And that's a cumulative effect, whether it was the 9/11 prolonged injury or was the recent one. I don't know what.
I'm sure it was all that combined and then some.
Yeah, exactly. But hopefully awareness and what you're doing to put it out there so that parents are more, you know, protective of their kids, I think is a great thing. It's like soccer players. You never think soccer, but look, soccer with the head, right? Yep. I would never think soccer is a dangerous sport, but, you know, cheerleading. My girls did cheerleading. Look at the flyers, and they land on their head all the time. And, you know, thank God mine was the base, but even the base, my daughter was a base. And
still. Kid, you know, it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much. That's what people fail to realize.
So I got a hard Irish head, so Dempsey, you know. Go. But I think that
got a hard Italian head. I think maybe I had one.
Exactly. So, but I appreciate the time, Brian.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have all of Mike's information because there is a wealth of information when it comes to Mike. I couldn't possibly fit it all into one podcast episode, to be honest. No. You've got so many things you've experienced throughout your life. You've got so many great stories to tell. So many charities.
Going to Mandalay Bay. You don't want to travel with Mike Dempsey because I happen to be.
I know. You seem to attract all of these. I mean. Bad things in a way, I guess. I mean, 9/11, and then you were at the shooting in at the Mandalay Bay in Vegas.
I was filming a show called Tanked on Animal Planet for my friend Brett Raymer, my best friend growing up. Brett and I, we were filming the show that weekend at the at a place. It was an engagement party episode. I only got on for like 30 seconds, by the way. Brett almost had me. I was almost killed at Mandalay Bay shooting, and only got 30 seconds of screen time on the show. I got cut out of the credits.
But they couldn't give you an extra 30 at least.
No, right? But no, I would have to be there at the hotel. I was actually going to Scott Baio's golf outing the next day in L.A. It was just a layover kind of thing and stayed in Mandalay Bay all the time. I didn't know what a Route 91 concert was. I don't follow country music. I have no idea. I'm a Bruce Springsteen, Tom Petty kind of guy.
Yeah.
Ironically, Tom Petty died the next day after October
1st. Ironically,
But like, I had no idea a concert was going on where they had it. You couldn't hear it from where the hotel was.
Yeah.
My friend who was with me was trying to get back to the Excalibur. We couldn't find the tram. The tram, Mandalay Bay to Excalibur. I had no idea. I don't go to Excalibur. No offense at a hotel, but we went outside by the fountain. I was saying just walk to Las Vegas Boulevard. It was like 10 o'clock on a Sunday night. And then we hear what we thought were fireworks, pop, pop, pop. And then about 30 seconds later, then we heard the reel. The guy must have switched windows and went from one window to the other. It was right over our head. And I just heard sniper. And we're like, oh, okay. And then nobody in the hotel knew what was going on. Like I told the security guy, yo, there's a shooter outside, sniper. And they're like, the guy's like, yeah, okay. And people are gambling and no reaction. It was almost like a, you couldn't make this up.
Yeah.
It took about 15 minutes until the SWAT teams and everybody mobilized. And then it was like a whole overnight. But I remember sitting there in lockdown saying, only me, like, what is, that's the Forrest Gump part, what you said earlier. How did I end up in this? And I just want to get to the golf outing the next day. So I'm like strategizing because they're not letting anybody of us out of there. My bag, I couldn't get back to my room. So I had to tell the cop, I'm in room number, you know, get my stuff. And I had to do a sob story. I had to get home. My daughter's sick. I made it all up. I'll say that on record. But all these years later, statute of limitations, I had to make up the sob story. My daughter was sick in the hospital. I had to get home. I was really just going to make that golf outing in Los Angeles. Yeah. So I don't get in trouble for that.
That's crazy, but though.
But it was crazy story. So I survived that one. And it was just like, so I hope that there's no more of those. I just got to stop traveling, I think.
Mike, I hope we can hang out next year at the Super Bowl because I do want to get down there. I'm hoping to make an appearance on Radio Row at the very least. But okay. I don't know. I might have to scope out the scene before we get together. I don't want to get caught up in some other historical moment.
Well, I'll be on Bourbon Street with Jim McMahon. If you remember the Super Bowl shuffle that, you know, when he played New Orleans in 1986. Jim was at a pretty crazy time on Bourbon Street. I think he mooned a few helicopters. I mean, there was a lot of theatrics. And when I'm around Jim McMahon, who I hang out with a lot, Jim and I have a great time. So if you're with us in Bourbon Street, I can't predict where you're going to end up the next day. So
well, good.
Hangover, you may be on a rooftop. You never know. So I would not
say here. I appreciate the warning. I'll definitely be prepared.
Sounds good.
But Mike, I'm going to have all your information in the show notes. So anybody interested in reading up about Mike or getting in touch with him, we'll have all his information there. So you guys can tap into his experiences, his philanthropy work, which he does a tremendous amount of. Mike, it's been awesome having you on the podcast. Thanks for sharing your experiences and taking us through some interesting topics and crazy stories. And I'm glad to see you're doing well and feeling better. I know we had to push this back because you weren't feeling so great. So glad to hear you're better.
For the first time in 4 years, I was like invincible. I never had COVID. Everybody else in the world had COVID, but me. I traveled the most. I didn't even wear a mask during COVID, like most people. And I never got it. My daughter gave it to me.
Yeah,
so
it's going
to
get everybody. Don't worry. It's going to get everybody at some point. But glad to see you're doing well and feeling better and on the road to recovery here. Looking forward to you getting that flag football event next Super Bowl. I'll be looking for you. And
I got somebody else. I got to get somebody else in the hospital. I'm waiting for who's my next victim.
Looking for targets. Keep an eye out there, people. Mike's looking for targets. Mike, from one New Yorker to another, thanks so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Dempsey on the Injured List podcast. Thanks for tuning in.